Welcome to the Defence Forces podcast, brought to you by the Defence Forces Public Relations Branch.
Hello and welcome to the Irish Defence Forces podcast. My name is Captain Cian Clancy, and today we're speaking to an ordnance officer about the roles of the Ordnance Corps, becoming an ordnance officer, explosive ordnance disposal, and dealing with equipment and procurement. So thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you, Cian.
So obviously we're not going to go into, for operation security reasons, we're not going to go into say your name or anything like that, but I am going to ask you a bit about like your broad educational background and military background, because in order to join the Ordnance Corps as an ordnance officer and undertake the Ordnance YOs, you do need to have a certain background, educational background. So for a start, your own military background, how long have you been in the military for?
Yeah, so my own background, I joined in 2007. So we do the maths here, but that's 13 years in the Defence Forces. And of that time, about 4 years in the Ordnance Corps. So I had a sort of a career before the Ordnance Corps.
You were initially commissioned into?
I was commissioned into the Cavalry Corps.
Okay, right.
Yeah, so very different, very, very enjoyable, as you know, you've covered here before. And then I did a change in 2016 into the Ordnance Corps.
Okay, but when we were talking earlier, you mentioned that you joined as a non-grad, so you actually didn't have a degree when you joined.
Yeah, correct. So I joined out of school, and then obviously being a school leaver, I was afforded the opportunity to go to college under the USAC scheme. While there, I studied mechanical engineering, and it wasn't exactly with a sort of a set purpose to go into the Ordnance Corps or the Engineering Corps, but it was definitely in the back of my mind that that would be a possibility down the line.
Okay, yeah, and obviously there's a, like, doing the Ordnance YOs, it's a really technical kind of specialist skill.
Correct, yeah.
And it's something that would be very attractive to a lot of people with a science background or with an engineering background like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so what we're kind of going to go through as the podcast goes along, we're going to, first of all, for people at home, they mightn't realise what the Ordnance Corps actually is. Mm-hmm. And as we talked about, a lot of people outside the Defence Forces would simply associate your job with bomb disposal. But there's an awful lot of other aspects.
Yeah, correct. There's a huge amount more to it. The way we normally break it down is the Ordnance Corps is a technical, a tactical, and a logistical corps. So from a technical side, we're the subject matter experts in a wide range of anything to do with weapons, ammunition, and the electronics and optical equipment that support that. And in support of that, we have some specialty skill sets. Mm-hmm. Of personnel within the corps. So we have specialist armourers who manage weapons, specialist artificers who handle, maintain the bigger weapons. And then the electronic and optical gurus who look after, you know, the obviously modern weapon systems are a lot more, have a lot more electronics in them,
yeah,
and a lot more,
yeah,
integrated optical systems. So there's a huge amount of that which they're responsible for. And ammunition examiners who manage the ammunition in the Defence Forces. So then that's the job of the Corps from a
technical
sense, yeah. From a tactical point of view, as you mentioned, explosive ordnance disposal, or EOD, is the big one that jumps out. And that would be, obviously, the Ordnance Corps provides the only EOD capability to the state in aiding the civil power, which is the Garda Síochána. Mm-hmm. And then logistical role, that would be involved in the support of the frontline units. So at the end of the day, your infantry, your cavalry, your artillery, they need support. Mm-hmm. And that's from the logistical corps like ourselves, who provide support on ranges, who provide support in terms of ammunition, storage of ammunition, management, the importance of which has obviously underlined recently, you know, the safety of ammunition and explosives,
yeah,
with recent events.
The Beirut blast is referring to there, yeah.
Yeah. So that's the sort of the logistical role, mm-hmm, of the Ordnance Corps.
And the Corps' involvement in procurement as well, which we'll go into later on in a bit more detail.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, exactly. Anything that that we get in, any capital projects, the ordnance would have an input if it involves weapons or ammunition or any combination thereof. And obviously then the expertise of the ordnance officers and then the members of the ordnance corps in general is forms a big part of that decision making process.
Yeah, of course. And we obviously when we're going to talk about your own role, it's as a commission officer and it's a specific role, but yeah. For enlisted personnel as well within the corps, there's some really specialised jobs to be done, which you mentioned earlier, and also education opportunities as well to come into the corps and yes. be trained in those optical systems and
absolutely, they're very specialised skill sets, technical roles with associated technical pay and all that, and they require a huge amount of training. They're probably the longest courses that the Defence Forces offers is these programs. And then so your job as an ordnance officer is not to replace the skill sets of these highly technical experts, because you couldn't possibly do that, but it's to know enough that you can manage their contribution effectively.
Yeah, and create an environment for them to
exactly
wield the expertise that they've gained.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
100%. Great. Well, as regards like becoming an ordnance officer, so the ordnance young officers course, which is the kind of gateway into becoming an ordnance officer. At the moment, in order to get on that course, there are two streams.
Yes, correct. Yeah. So the two streams, the first of which is if you're listening to this and you fancy a career in the ordnance corps and you have the correct educational background, then you can apply for an ordnance specific cadetship, and you know all the details of that will be through the normal application portal.
For military.ie you'll find the educational specifications and requirements, and there is also, I believe, having looked at it, the Director of Ordnance can take a look. If your educational requirement isn't necessarily listed under that, you can specify it to the Defence Forces as part of your application, and then it's at the discretion of the Director of Ordnance as to whether he feels you're
absolutely, yeah, and it's Ordnance's decision. If Ordnance, the Director of Ordnance feels that your qualification will enable you to be an ordnance officer, then they can make that call. But by and large, and you think you touched on earlier, the engineering disciplines, the science disciplines, that would be the broad stream of where we would be looking for people. Mm-hmm. So that would be, you come into the organisation as a cadet, very similar to any other cadet in the Defence Forces, except you are earmarked for the Ordnance Corps, and you will go straight to the Ordnance Corps on commissioning and commence your Ordnance Young Officers course.
So you do a cadetship, a normal cadetship of the type that we would have covered previously in a previous episode.
Yeah.
So for anybody out there that has that qualification and is thinking that it might be a route they'd like to go down, maybe the Army cadetship episode would be a good place to listen to as well. So after that point.
Absolutely, and the key point there is, you know, regardless of the route you come in, you know, you're an officer in the Defence Forces first and foremost. So that would be your first step, you know, so the first gate to get through, the first yeah. hurdle, and to make sure that that's something that appeals to you. The other sort of stream would be where we look for people within the organisation who have the educational background and who are serving in other corps. So I was lucky enough to come in by that route, because obviously, as I mentioned earlier, I joined as a school leaver, so I, from an educational point of view, wouldn't have been suitable for any technical core. But having then gotten the opportunity to study, to build an education, I was able to later join the Ordnance Corps.
Yeah, of course. And you mentioned, when we were talking about the episode, you mentioned how often an Ordnance Young Officers course will have a really good spread of experience in it. They'll have people who have just come off the cadetship and
yeah.
maybe don't have experience of the organisation mixed in with people who've come from other corps that do have that experience.
Yes, and it's something I'm observing myself as an instructor with a course ongoing, and you have that experience, and it really is beneficial to the course as a whole, that mix of experience. You know, you've got the younger officers who are just out of the cadetship, they have that enthusiasm and that more recent training, which is very important, you know, and then you have got the older souls who are sort of a bit more experienced, longer in the tooth,
yeah.
and they can steer the younger officers. So it's a really good good mix.
Yeah, that's great. So what we're going to do, I have in front of me here now sort of a list of some of the broad topics that would be covered on an Ordnance Young Officers course.
Yeah.
Obviously, it goes up through and does deal with explosive ordnance, I suppose, which we might talk in some detail as well. But just, so one of the first ones I have here in front of me is bridging studies, is one
yes.
of the subjects.
So again, that's formed on the kind of understanding that whatever your educational background, Not everyone will be as recent, as current, out of education, and the educational backgrounds might vary. So the idea being to bring everyone up to the same standard. So that's a few weeks where we cover some of the basic, the mathematics, the engineering, the physics, chemistry, and the electronics, which we feel is a sort of a prerequisite.
Yeah,
to becoming an ordnance officer.
Just to refresh and make sure, given as you mentioned, some of the people on the course are longer in the tooth, and maybe it's a while since they've been in education. And
exactly,
if you're not doing physics every week, and
exactly,
you won't remember it.
Yes.
Okay, so you've brought people back up to having that kind of base level of sort of mathematics, science kind of understanding or engineering that they might have had from their degree.
Yeah.
And you move on to energetic materials.
Yeah, so this is the first introduction. This is 4 weeks, and it's your first introduction to... People who would have had a chemistry background, a lot of this might be familiar, but it's for people like myself who are more from the engineering, this was not very familiar. And it's teaching you the chemistry of explosives, basically. Energetic materials covering explosives, propellants, pyrotechnics, all of the substances that you later be expected to have a very good knowledge of. So it's chemistry, but it's chemistry with a view towards the fun stuff, explosives.
Okay, right, yeah. So, and like, that's all theory on paper at this point, so that's all...
Yeah, very, very lecture heavy and problem-based assignments and, doing chemical calculations. It's all in the classroom, but with a couple of sort of fun days where you get to see some real-life explosive effects, but very much in the classroom.
Okay, right, and when we were talking there, you mentioned how... with regard to our own young officers course and our own ordnance course, it's done slightly differently in that you become a proper subject matter expert in the theory before you actually, whereas in other countries.
Yeah, well, it's the philosophy underpinning the young officers course really is before teaching you how to be an explosive ordnance disposal or EOD operator, you are a subject matter expert in the chemistry of explosives, ammunition systems themselves, and that the idea being that gives you a very solid base on which to actually make your tactical decisions on the ground, as opposed to where they just teach bomb disposal as a skill.
And you follow just a procedure.
Exactly.
Okay, so you're more flexible than I would think.
It gives you that confidence in what you're doing, a bit more flexibility, and it's as an organisation we're quite proud of the fact that. When we respond to when we're needed, that we're sending people who are subject matter experts in the field of explosives and ammunition.
Okay, right. So, energetic materials, and then that's your explosives, and then you move on to ammo systems, which is putting it in a weapon, basically.
Exactly, as you said, it's the application of explosives and explosive train. So, how you go from to a fuse, to a main charge of an ammunition system, how it works, how it can, how it can fail, all the various types of ammunition that are out there, from your small arms ammunition, so a bullet, for example, fired from a rifle or a pistol, all the way up to large, complex guided weapons. So. Guided missiles,
your javelins and all that stuff.
Javelins, your RBS-70s, all those. So it's a huge spectrum.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I've often thought about like the wealth of knowledge as we would contact ordnance officers during EOD callouts, and the kind of level of sort of easy knowledge that they have of it's this millimeter and that's what it is and that's where it came from and that's what it's for. It's obviously a very 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 in depth module.
It's very in depth and it's. The way it demands quite a lot from the student because you need to do two things. One, you need to understand a lot of the theory, and this can be very maths heavy, the theory behind how fragments accelerate or how shaped charges to defeat armor, how they form. But at the same time, you need to know just the sheer raw knowledge, the weights of the explosive fills of Defence Forces munitions, what size are they, what colorings are they. So, there's that real two-pronged approach where it's very rote learning, but at the same time, very in-depth, analytical learning as well.
Okay, and So once you've all this kind of theory done, and you, as I said, you've had a couple of days where you might have seen some of these weapon systems going off and that kind of thing, you move on to the first part of your actual explosive ordnance disposal training.
Yes, so what we call conventional munitions disposal, or CMD. And it's a nice break because, as you've mentioned, you've done quite a lot on lectures and in the classroom, and here finally the chance to get out and to do some real life practice on the range. So there's lots of time on the range, lots of time trying various techniques for disposing of munitions. As the name suggests, this first part of EOD is focused on what we call conventional munitions. So a shell, a projectile, a mortar bomb, anything that is made in a factory for a military to use, against another military, as opposed to something that's improvised, which we'll come to. So, as you can see, it's a progression from the ammunition systems, because you learn how ammunition works. Now you're learning now that you know how it works, you're learning what to do when you find it. Yeah. When you turn up at a scene, and there's a grenade in somebody's back garden, or there's a projectile which has been fired on a range and has failed to explode on impact. All these various scenarios. Or you're overseas and there's lots of unexploded ordnance found.
Yeah.
Near a civilian populated area. What you do, what your safety considerations are, how you protect people.
Yeah.
So you start going into the thinking behind EOD, which is all about obviously protecting people and disposing of the ordnance in a safe manner.
And because it's an interesting one from the perspective, like, to sort of, what immediately springs to mind is like blowing something up.
Yes.
But obviously, if you find, as you said, a grenade in someone's backyard, and you can't just blow it up.
Because, you can't, you know.
Or there was an interesting case recently where there was a grenade was pulled up from a canal in Dublin, and it was against the side of a bridge, and you can't just explode it because you might damage the bridge.
Exactly, you might damage the bridge, and you know, it's no good. Yes, you've gotten rid of the grenade, but you may have done a lot more damage than the grenade would have done. Now you may. You may have caused, financial damage. You may even, cause an injury or death to someone if you do it poorly. So it's all about getting rid of the threat and doing it in a safe manner. And there are various ways and means and techniques at our disposal. And we learn all of those on the conventional munitions disposal course. So it's really a satisfying course. And at the end of it, the culmination of it is an assessment where, you know, you're on a large range somewhere like the Glen of Imaal, and you're tested on various scenarios where there'll be a piece of live ordnance, and you know there may be a scenario such as you need to protect a nearby building, and you need to come up yourself and actually implement the plan for disposing of that safely, and the proof is in the pudding. Then if you do, that's you pass, and if you don't, you know that's you fail, to do your job.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And so moving on then, once you've kind of dealt with conventional munitions disposal, move on to the improvised.
Correct, yes. So, and it's building on this foundation. So now you have a foundation of how to deal with, how to respond to a scenario where the army have been asked to help dispose of an item. Whereas only now we've gone from having something like a grenade or a mortar bomb, something that we know how it works, is predictable, to something that is completely in the hands of a criminal, a terrorist, a perpetrator of some kind. Improvised device, explosive device, as the name suggests, is just anything that can be made by somebody who wants to create havoc for whatever reason.
So it's a very, you really need to be on your toes when you're going into it. And how do you train somebody to understand from without going into too much kind of like transgressing operation security, but like to process, okay, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to find out what it is without triggering it.
This is where when I said at the start that it's a technical, a tactical, logistical core, this is where really the tactical element comes in, because you as the EOD operator, you and your team need to make a very detailed threat assessment. Why is this device here? What is the intent of the perpetrator? And that will feed into the analysis you make. So there are a number of categorizations. I said every IED is different, But at the same time, there are categorizations and I suppose without going into too much detail, but you assess what it is, how it is likely to function, and what, most importantly, what safety measures you need to put in place to stop it from functioning, mm-hmm. or if it does function, to protect people, you know, so how far you need to evacuate people, things like that.
Fair enough. And internationally speaking, and we kind of we went interjecting just to underline this, like the ordnance core of the Defence Force and the IED disposal capability that the Defence Force would have is very well recognised. Yeah. And a lot of that comes down to the troubles on the island and the munitions that dissidents would have left around the country and that we would have had to deal with.
Absolutely correct. Yeah, we have a, unfortunately, there's a history of IED activity in the country, and that has meant that the Ordnance Corps has a very full history in dealing with these, and as you said, are quite well regarded internationally, up there with, you know, some of the top countries for dealing with, because the threat was so extreme, and the provisional IRA in terms of the IED capability they had was really, in some respects, you know, remains unsurpassed.
Yeah.
So there's a huge wealth of technical knowledge there.
So you do your IED disposal module, and then you're put onto a duty panel at that point, having still some study to do to become a fully fledged ordnance officer. But you're now on the UOD panel.
Absolutely, yeah. So we're only halfway there in terms of the making you an ordnance officer. But at this stage, you're now qualified to be on the duty panel and to conduct EOD in support of the Aid to the Civil Power. So you go and you conduct duties, which is obviously quite daunting at first. That realization that all the tasks, all the scenarios which you trained for on your course, you know, suddenly they're real. But it is the huge draw, I think, for me and for a lot of people in the Ordnance Corps, is that the scenarios you train for are actually quite similar to what you'll do in real life.
What you'll encounter in the
you'll
field.
You'll actually put that into practice.
And I suppose everybody's kind of imagining what is it like to actually put on. And people have seen, you know, like there's films out there, there's films like The Hurt Locker and all this kind of thing, which we'll, the Hollywood side of it. But the idea of putting on that the big suit.
Yes.
What is that like when you kind of know that you're approaching something that's potentially going to explode?
So, like a lot of things in the military, at that stage, when you're approaching something, you, because of your training, that serves a great purpose, which is to remove that element of to remove that element of uncertainty and fear. You're following a procedure,
yep.
And you're going through in your head your procedure, and that's what you're thinking about. So you're not thinking about the
consequences. Oh my God! What if this goes up?
Yeah. Yeah, you know in your procedure that you've done things safely and that you've mitigated the risk and reduced it to as low as reasonably practical for yourself. So that's a huge. So certainly, what's going on in your head is more so related to procedure. So yeah. All kinds of things buzzing around there. In terms of the suit itself, I mean, that's a whole other experience. But that's the beauty of the training. It removes that unfamiliarity. You know, you're putting on something that, you know, weighs 35 kilos or so, plus a heavy helmet on top of that. But it's not just the weight, it's also the constriction of movement is something that you don't appreciate till you start training in it. So even simple things like picking up something or putting down something, kneeling, crouching, lying down to look under things or above things, climbing up ladders, getting in and out of doors, everything is harder. And something that you have to learn how to do is to manage your mental state, because when you're physically degraded, your mental function goes down as well. So you need to learn how to plan what you're doing in meticulous detail and to not be in a situation where you're compromising yourself because you can't think straight because you're so physically degraded. So it requires a level of physical fitness, certainly, and also a level of planning, so that, and an appreciation that no matter how fit you are, you'll get degraded very quickly.
Yeah, of course. And is there a kind of, I presume you kind of have a timeline of it, like you kind of, okay, after 10 minutes I know that I need to go back.
Exactly, and that's again where the importance of the team comes in. It's absolutely paramount. Like, you're not doing this by yourself, and even though you see the classic picture is the lonely operator walking down by him or herself, but like, you've got a team, and your team is so important. So you'll discuss your plan, you'll discuss your threat assessment, you'll not just discuss it, but you'll get feedback and you'll get your team's input as well. And then the team is so important in managing your own state physically. So you can't put on the suit for yourself, by example. It's just a simple example of it. You need somebody else to put it on you.
Yeah.
And then you need your team to sort of tell you or to discuss with them your plan, and for them to, you know, your timeline, as you mentioned, how long you're going to be there, and to get their feedback and kind of confirmation of that.
So one of the images that people would be really familiar with would be, you know, it does appear on the media from time to time, would be that big square green truck, but the amount of expertise that is in the back of that truck, outside of just the ordnance officer and operator themselves, the people that operate the robots or the equipment is huge.
It's huge. And it's something that we pride ourselves on as the Ordnance Corps, that by international comparison, say, our EUD number twos, as the NCOs are called, who assist the operator, are very well trained for starters and hugely experienced. So again, these would come from these guys and girls would come from technical streams within the Ordnance Corps, and then they do an EUD course. But it's certainly something that you rely heavily on, especially when you're fairly junior and fairly recently trained, like myself. You know, you really rely on the expertise of your number two. Yeah. And sometimes you can be lucky, you can have two number twos, you know, assisting you. And again, you really heavily rely on their expertise.
Yeah, well, that's great to hear. And that's also kind of like a microcosm for like a lot of the rest of the defense forces, like that working in the team is a huge part of military service across the three services.
Absolutely, yeah. There's nothing, you know, it's not an individual effort. And you know, if anyone thinks that, they quickly become disabused of that notion. One takeaway from the training process is to get people to realise that, exactly as they would have done in the cadetship, that it's all about teamwork.
Yeah. So you've been qualified in EOD,
yes,
both conventional and IED, but there is more to the course than after that, after the kind of bomb disposal aspect of it. You move on to your light weapons.
Yeah, exactly. So once you've been qualified in EOD, and there's even a whole other element of chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear EOD, again, which we won't go into detail, but that's further sort of specialisation. Mm-hmm. But then, as you said, you go into your light weapons and your heavy weapons. And again, to touch back to something I said earlier, this is where you, as the officer, while you're not going to be the subject matter expert fixing weapons on the range, or making sure that equipment is you know, suitable for firing on the range, you do need to have the knowledge and the expertise to manage the subject matter experts who do. So
yeah,
that's what that's all about.
And is that going through, like, just say the light and heavy weapons, which are the two modules, that's going through all the weapons that the Defence Forces operates, or does it kind of go through categories of weapons as well?
So it's a little bit of both. It's for starters, it's going through everything that the Defence Forces operates, and kind of a little bit like the ammunition system module, you need to know a lot of information. So all the data behind the weapons which we use, but then as well the sort of analytical knowledge of how a weapon operates. So if you see something new, you can form an accurate assessment of how this weapon system operates, how it's similar or different from something that we're more familiar with in the Defence Forces, and I suppose most importantly, the so what. And then, of course, if we're procuring new weapons, that's where the technical knowledge comes in for us to be able to say, well, you know, we need a weapon with, you know, such and such a mode of operation in order to replace this existing one.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And so you've light and heavy weapons, which is the actual mechanical operation of these weapons, but
yes,
then you've an electronic aspect then.
Exactly, yeah. And obviously, more modern weapons, it's even more the case that they have a lot of electronics and a lot of optical equipment built into them or associated with them. And again, that's where you're learning the enough to know how to rely then on the subject matter expertise of your what we call armament artificer instruments, so yeah. Your electronics and optical gurus.
Okay, yeah, and it's an interesting one because, like, for example, having worked on, say, down in the naval base with regard to media and dealing with, say, marine engineers, they often say that the newer ships in the fleet for the naval service are more and more electronic, and I presume it's the same can be said for different weapon systems and optic systems, that the electronic aspect is ever increasing.
Absolutely, absolutely. As you get more capabilities, such as, you know, gyroscopic stabilization on weapons platforms or better like remote weapon stations, better optical capability, integration with thermal imagers and night vision equipment, all of that relies more and more on, you know, electronic, yeah. Solid electronics. And so that just becomes ever more important.
And moving on then to a few of the other kind of things you cover, so you're covering like your radar accident investigation and also your ammunition management.
Yes, yes. So again, there's a it comes into the logistical role of the Ordnance Corps. One might think that with ammunition, it's a simple case of, you know, just put it in a container or put it in a warehouse and kind of forget about it. But again, there's a huge amount of regulations which have come from, you know, from bitter experience abroad and at home as to how to safely manage ammunition. So ordnance officers get trained on that. So that they're able to maintain the Defence Force's stock of ammunition, that they can maintain ammunition. When we go overseas, we set up a new camp, how to store the ammunition safely.
So I know there are some particular types of rounds that over a long period of time require things like temperature control rooms and things like, you know, the RBS 70, I think, the anti-aircraft, the air defence missile requires that.
Absolutely, yeah, and more so, yeah, especially as is the case with guided weapons, because, well, for two main reasons. One, they're very expensive, so we want to look after them. And then two, they have quite a lot of energetic material in them. So yeah. If something goes wrong, it can go very wrong. So temperature control for guided weapons and especially humidity control as well is very important.
So outside of the sort of within camp aspect of the young officers course, there's also like an academic aspect to it.
Yes.
And there's also like a work placement aspect to it, but that's always with that's with a unit within the Defence Force. You
correct.
Go to an ordnance unit.
To an ordnance unit and generally to one of the brigade ordnance companies where you'll get on the job experience with the day-to-day work of the ordnance.
Okay, and then from an academic perspective, you do a dissertation.
Yes.
And the course itself is affiliated with Carlow IT.
Correct, yeah. So it's it's a level nine, a Masters of Engineering with Carlow IT. And the dissertation, really, there's a lot of latitude here. A student, if they have a particular interest and it's deemed to be worthy of the, you know, the level nine course, they can pursue that. And if they don't, then the Ordnance Corps has any shortage of topics which they need to find out more about.
Yeah.
So it's driven by need, really. What do we need to know more about, or to get an expert sort of to dig deep into a problem and to do some experimentation? And you know, they always tend to have a large degree of practical experimentation. So
yeah.
Working with explosives or ammunition and computer modeling, and again, that's where they engineering or science background comes in heavily.
Yeah, and it also links back to what you were talking about earlier as regards having a real kind of subject matter expert rather than just teaching a skill set of, say, bomb disposal. You now have a real academic background in the whole field of ordnance, munitions and explosives.
Correct, yes, yeah. And that's exactly what the Masters in Ordnance, Munitions, Explosives Engineering. And the idea is that, this course produces a subject matter expert in these fields,
who has flexibility and can think in a kind of critical manner about the whole area.
Absolutely, yeah, and actually, very good point there that you mentioned. The critical thinking is something which I think is certainly has been my experience. It's highly pushed on the course and within the Corps to to give you enough expertise that you, you know, you don't take things at face value, and you can be the voice in the room that, that, you know, says, well, such and such an assessment is, from a technical point of view, is correct or isn't correct.
Yeah.
And it arms you with that knowledge.
Okay, fantastic. And just to move on slightly as well to like another, just another aspect of your earnings call once you come out as well, it's just the, what we talked about earlier was the acceptance and procurement of equipment.
Yes. Yeah, so equipment and ammunition, and basically everything which the Defence Forces buys, and there's quite a lot of it, that's related to ordnance, munitions or explosives, an ordnance officer and certainly members of the Ordnance Corps, specialist members of the Ordnance Corps, are involved at various stages of the procurement. Mm-hmm. So this could be on a, you know, a new weapon system or a new platform if it involves integration with a weapon system. We'll need to give our, you know, be involved in the board and make submissions and give our technical advice. And I suppose more importantly, be physically there, visit the factory, visit where it's made, wherever in the world that may be, and, you know, give a sort of a go or no go. Like, this is a good piece of equipment, or this equipment maybe falls short of the safety requirements or the capability requirements.
And there's also an aspect for you of actually writing, like, extrapolating the need and actually writing those, as in, we are looking for a thing
exactly
that does A, B, C, and D. And you can tighten that up depending on...
Exactly. And again, I like to think then, yeah, we can be maybe a vital link between the end user. Ultimately, at the end of the day, our job is to support the end user. So the infantier, the cavalry man or woman, or the gunner, who's going to use this equipment.
Yeah.
But then our job is to sort of, I suppose, translate that need to interact with the user, end users, translate that need into, you know, looking what's out there and, you know, critically analysing, well, what within our constraints of budget and all that kind of, you know, real world constraints, what can we realistically, what do we want? What can we get out of it? How can we extract the most benefit?
Yeah. What can we deliver here? Yeah. And that even goes on to clothing and boots and all that kind of, as in.
Yeah, even the sort of workaday things like that is an ordnance responsibility. Mm. And but again, the key thing is that it's not just ordnance, you know, sitting in an office somewhere making these decisions. The key thing is that we get feedback from the organisation as a whole. So yeah, what works, and let's be honest, what doesn't work, and what do we need to change for next time?
And there's always a testing aspect of these things as well. I know that, for example, just to go onto brass tacks of boots and things like that, there will be, you'll see some guys on with some boots that aren't necessarily issue boots, and they're trialling them to see if they're...
Exactly, to see if it's up to the capability. And again, a boot that can look great in a catalogue and can be given a really good sell by a sales rep and can be, you know, very comfortable in an office, you take that out to the Glen, you give that to a cadet for a while, you know, that's, you know, see how it lasts after that. That's a real test.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to buy a few thousand pairs of boots and the next thing they're falling apart after a 2 week exercise.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's just an aspect, I suppose, of the Ordnance Corps that people wouldn't be necessarily aware of. And again, we spoke about sort of the fact that bomb disposal is always like up there at the top.
Yes.
But these are other things that you have to take into account, and another string to the bow of the ordnance officer and the member of the ordnance corps as well.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And just from your own perspective as well, you've actually recently completed a further course of training in the UK with the British Army.
Correct, yeah. I was very lucky, actually. I got afforded the opportunity to go do the ammunition technical officer course. I suppose the course I've just described, the Ordnance Wales, this would be not quite the same, but certainly analogous to it in the British Army, in that it focuses on the technical aspects of ammunition in huge detail.
So how did it compare? Like, would you find that you had covered some of this ground before, or was it a real new opener? Or like, what was it like working with another military?
We covered a certain amount, but then some of it was new, and even the experience of covering a lot of the ground again was hugely beneficial to me. The experience, I can only say positive things about it. The institution was, you know, it was a very well-run place. The staff and fellow students were a great bunch, and I had a great time over there.
Yeah.
So it was a great opportunity.
That's fantastic. And was there other international students on the course with yourself, or was it just yourself and?
No, there were two Kiwis, so two from the NZDF, and then nine British students and myself. So 12 of us in all. So a fairly compact group.
Yeah, a nice sized group. Yeah,
it was. Yeah, and you know, so the course was 20 months in total. So obviously we became quite close over the course of that.
And how did you find applying what you learned on that course to your current role now? Is there a specific niche that you've kind of put into now to examine, or?
Well, I think I was again lucky when I came back. I came back to the Ordnance School, so I think that was the hope. There was that I could apply some of the knowledge I'd gained on the course in the UK, and I have to say I've found it quite beneficial in that way. Like a lot of the in formulating lesson plans and how we instruct and the philosophy of how we instruct the young officers course, I've been lucky. I've been able to bring a lot from my recent experience in the UK to bear on that. You know, allied then with the strong culture that's already there in the Ordnance School, I think it's a good mix.
That's fantastic. That's great. And as regards continuous professional development in the Ordnance Corps as well, and we spoke about the international reputation of the Ordnance Corps of the Irish Defence Forces being very positive. There are other opportunities as well for personnel.
Correct. Yeah. There's further development as it's supposed as the need arises. Director of Ordnance will send officers to complete courses. So these could be in aspects of EOD, for example, like more specialised aspects of it. The idea is once you've done the Ordnance Wales course and you're qualified in EOD, you're qualified to a certain level, but there's a whole spectrum of further, more advanced qualifications. I spoke briefly about the chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, so there'll be a certain amount of CPD in that field. But there's then opportunities you can do abroad that will further that even more.
Yeah.
And other aspects of EOD.
Yeah, and making sure we're all at the kind of cutting edge from an international perspective
and,
as well.
And that's really important because it allows us, as we mentioned earlier, there's an unfortunate history on this island of IEDs. But then this allows us to integrate lessons that were learned in more recent theatres, such as, you know, Afghanistan, for example, where there was a lot of IED activity, or other such fields abroad.
Yeah, because it's interesting too that the construction of things like IEDs is a constantly evolving field, so you need to be constantly evolving your skill set.
Absolutely, and you know, training your education and your training doesn't stop when you finish your Ordnance Wales course. It's very much a starting point for it. So continuous professional development and then even informal training. So constantly refamiliarizing yourself with your kit, with your equipment, doing training with your team, when the opportunity arises. All these things are crucial.
Fantastic. So at the end of the day, thanks so much for coming on to the show and shedding some light on what is a really fascinating aspect of military service. I'm sure a lot of people will get a lot out of that.
You're very welcome.
For further information on the Irish Defence Forces, check out our social media channels and military.ie. Serving members are also encouraged to check out the members area of military.ie. This episode was produced by Corporal Keith Harrison and Governor Pádraig Sullivan of the Defence Forces Audiovisual School. The Irish Defence Forces podcast will return soon with another episode. Until then, thanks for listening and stay safe.